and go here, or if we pick the point and go through the other direction, we saw that because of a branch point, the value here and here are not the same. Right? In one case, we went here. In the other case, we went down and on, we are on the other side. So basically, I have, what do I have? I can start here and go up to here. So this is basically the integral from minus z star, I can break this contour integral up to z star of square root over 2 pi h bar plus the integral from z star to minus z star of minus the square root over 2 pi h bar. And this is what gives this twice the integral that I had before. Please do ask if you don't, if there's something unclear. I might be, it looks clear to me, but maybe there's some subtlety which I'm not seeing. Yes?
What exactly does it mean to say quasi-momentum?
It's a word. Doesn't mean anything.
So what are we looking at physically then?
Quasi-momentum is the interpretation of the classical momentum. See, when you have, where you are in the classical, this is what you call the classical momentum. Right? The energy is potential energy plus kinetic energy. So classically, this is the momentum. When you do some condensed matter physics, this would be the block momentum which appears in block theorem when you define a quasi-momentum of the wave function. So there are some circumstances where this function p of x reduces to momentum that you are used to. So let's call it quasi-momentum because it's not always a momentum. See, there is this interpretation. This function is the function where this integral around the zeros is equal to n exactly, and not only approximately, like with the usual momentum. So in this sense, going around the cuts is the exact version of counting the number of quanta in action and angle variables. So it's really an honest momentum conjugate, which counts the number of quanta. Okay, is this clear? Very good. So, as I said, I would like to have here a list of predictions of things that I want to check later in Mathematica. So something I want to check at some point is that the nth zeros of the Hermit polynomial, this will be something we will see, how to compute zeros of some polynomial, should be equivalent to solving the electrostatic equation xj equal h bar over omega m, sum over k not equal to j up to n, 1 over xj minus xk. So this is the first thing we will want to check later in Mathematica. Okay, so now, how to derive this result that the function, that the zeros are given by the Hermit polynomial? So it's simple. We define a polynomial, Q, which is defined as a product up to n of x minus xj, function of x, a polynomial of x, which is just this. Okay? Now, let's compute 1/2 of q prime prime over q prime at xj. Mm-hmm. Let's compute this. So what is this? And this is this will be your starting point whenever you want to find what is q for an electrostatic potential, and you will see. So this will be the starting point. Whenever you have electrostatic potential, electrostatic interaction, for any potential, doesn't matter the potential, this will be your starting point, as you will see. So what is this equal to, if this is the polynomial? I don't want to use that. I just want to use this board here, just the definition and then this computation here. So what is it equal to? Can someone tell me? Okay, so it's simple that when you take two derivatives or when you take one derivative, you get almost the same result. You remove two factors, and here you remove just one factor. So basically, you get the sum of n terms. There is one factor here which remains. And basically, this is what you get. Okay? If you think a bit, it's more or less obvious that this is what you get. Okay? Any question here? Good. So, before moving on, let's set all this stuff. Let's set it to 1. Let's work in units where all that stuff is 1. Yes?
So, I'm getting keys. Explain where that comes from. You've got a product on the top.
Here I have a product on the top. Here I have a product, right? So when I take the derivatives, I have a sum over the terms that I'm removing.
Okay.
And that sum, and here I have a sum also over the terms that I'm removing. But here I must remove a very particular term because I'm evaluating it at xj. So if I don't want to get the zero result, I must remove the term where I have the term with xj. So if here is x5, this derivative must act on the factor x minus x5. Okay. Otherwise it will give zero, right? So here I know very well what this is. And here one of the derivatives must also act on the factor x5. And the other can act wherever it wants, and therefore there is a sum. And which derivative acts on x5 gives me the factor of 2, and that's what cancels the 1 half. Was it clear? Nope. Okay, so I can do it if you want, but this is just some boring algebra. I mean, there's nothing conceptually deep. So q prime of xj is equal to the product over k not equal to j of xj minus xk. Okay? Why? Because you have to remove one factor. When you take the derivative, you remove one factor there, and the factor you must remove must be the one precisely where you have the factor x minus xj, otherwise you would get zero. Okay? And if you take a second derivative, you get a similar factor, and the ratio is just this. Okay? This is really not something which is conceptually deep. I don't want to spend time here. But this, okay, but this is equal to xj. Okay? And here is where the equations enter. This is the only step. This is where the electrostatic equations enter. We use the electrostatic equations to say that this sum is nothing but xj. Notice that the first step I could do, it doesn't matter at all. And if I would have another potential, like x squared instead of x, I would just put here x squared. Okay? So this is generalizable very easily to other potentials. And you can have fun playing with changing the potential, everything will work. So this means something funny. It means that q prime prime minus 2 x q prime, now as a function of x, is a polynomial let me leave some space to write what is the degree of that polynomial. It's a polynomial of degree, let's think in a moment, which is 0 at x equal to xj. So it's obvious that it's a polynomial, right? It's a derivative of a polynomial plus another polynomial. It's a sum of two polynomials, so it's of course a polynomial. And it has zeros at x equal to xj. Because when x is equal to xj, this being zero is exactly what we wrote here. Right? What's the degree of the polynomial? So this was a polynomial of degree n. We take two derivatives, here it's n minus 2. Here we take one derivative, it's n minus 1, but we multiply by x, it's still n. So this guy is what dictates the degree of the polynomial, so it's a polynomial of degree n. Okay? Is it clear? So if this is a polynomial of degree n, and we know it's zeros, we know what is a polynomial. Right? But then, it means that q prime minus 2xq is, up to a constant which I don't know, just q. Because q is the polynomial with those zeros, with zeros at xj. What is alpha? How do we find alpha? First of all, is this clear? It is a polynomial of degree n with these zeros, but then it's Q. It's a definition. If you give me the zeros, I just construct a polynomial by its zeros. So of course, that combination is just some constant times alpha. What is Q? To know Q, just go to very large x. So at large x, the left-hand side behaves like minus 2x to the n, right? Minus 2x. Minus 2x, and this derivative gives a factor of n, right? So Q prime behaves like n x to the n minus 1, right? Because Q behaves, of course, like x to the n at very large n. So this is the left-hand side, and the right-hand side is just behaves like alpha times x to the n, so alpha is equal to minus 2n. Therefore, we conclude that q prime prime minus 2x q prime plus 2n q equal to 0. But this is precisely the equation which defines q to be the Hermite polynomials. This is the differential equation for Hn. Yes? Do I not lose a zero? This function here?
Yeah.
When I say that it has zeros at x equal to xj, I'm using this equation here. I'm using the fact that, you see, this factor is equal at xj is equal to 2 times q prime times this factor. I'm not using only the definition. Only from the definition, of course, you are absolutely right. There's no reason to say that this has zero at that value. I'm using this fact here. I showed here that at xj, this factor is equal to twice 2 times this times x. Okay? So it's because of the equation. If I would have an x square here, for example, I would put an x square here. And I would say that this combination also has zeros at xj. Okay? Good. So you see, this is how we would derive a differential. We will trade the electrostatic equilibrium conditions for generic potentials by some differential equation for some polynomials. Okay? This is how it would work. So this is the second check we want to do. Can you still read if I write here? That we want to check, we want to solve in Mathematica that differential equation to be sure that we did no mistake. So we want to check that qn prime prime minus 2x q prime plus 2n q gives q equal to hn of x. Of course, it's a second order differential equation. It will have two solutions, and we want a polynomial solution. Great. How are the zeros distributed? Okay. So we know. Now we want to consider n going to infinity again, many zeros, if you want again a classical limits. And we want to ask ourselves now, not what is the position, but what is the density of zeros now. No? Now we have many, we want some density. So we want to understand what is the density. Now there are many zeros and they are distributed between this minus z star and z star. And we want to understand what is their distribution, rho of x, where are they more dense, etc. Okay? Good. Let me just think for a moment. I'm just confused by something. Ah, no, it's okay. Good. Okay. So to understand this, we construct a very useful function which you might find in other contexts, which is called the resolvent. And the resolvent is the function g of x, which is defined as the sum over a pole, 1 over x minus xj. Okay, it's another function of x. So notice that if you give me q of x, I can tell you what are the zeros. If you give me g of x, I can also tell what are the zeros. In one case, I look for the zeros. In the other case, I look for the poles. Right? So, of course, both q and g contain all information about the zeros. In one case, I need to look for the zeros of q, and the other, I need to look for the poles of g, the zeros of the wave function of psi. Note also that basically g is equal to p up to trivial factors. Right? P, there was an h bar over I, and there was some linear term, which was trivial. But the non-trivial part, which is the sum of poles, is g and p are basically the same. Okay? Okay. Now, what will happen is the following. As we said, this poles condense into some line. And if I have my function g of x, I might consider the limit when n goes to infinity, and I might want to compute my function g of x minus I0, which means the second option here, minus I0, and here plus I0, minus g of x plus I0. This, I recall you, this is what I called in the beginning today the discontinuity function. Right? What is the value of the function when I go from one direction and when I go from the other direction? Now, let's see why would this be an interesting quantity to compute. Because what happens when I plug x minus I0 and x plus I0 in this equation here? We get that this g of x minus I0 minus g of x plus I0 is equal to the sum up to n, 1 over x minus xj minus I0 minus 1 over x minus xj plus I0. But what is this quantity here we saw already? When you have 1 over x minus I0 minus 1 over x plus I0. It's a delta function. So this means we saw that 1 over x minus I0, 1 over x plus I0 is a delta function. So it means that g of x minus I0 minus g of x plus I0, let me normalize it by 2 pi I, is nothing but the sum from j equal 1 up to n of delta of x minus xj, but this is nothing but what we would define as the density. Right? It's the sum of delta functions. When I integrate my density, I count how many particles I have. Okay? So my function g will be a function which will develop in the large n limit a discontinuity. And the value of the discontinuity is the density that we are looking for. Okay? Yes? No? Maybe? No? Okay, very good. So what is the discontinuity? No questions? Of course. The density of zeros, if you want, I mean this. it's the function. But what is the what's the density of zeros? It's the function such that the integral from minus z star up to some a of rho is the number of zeros from minus z star to a. The number of zeros which are in this region up to a, right? This is what the density is. It counts me when I integrate it up to some point. It tells me how many zeros are there up to that point. Right? This is what the density of states is. It's the sum of delta functions of E minus EJ, right? So for density of states, no one would complain. Everyone will immediately write this. It's the same thing, it's just density of zeros. Okay. But we saw that the discontinuity of P of X, right, was just P of X was a square root. P classical of X was a square root. So the discontinuity of P of X was just square root of 2m E minus V of X over 2 pi I. Which is equal, in our case, give me just 1 second. Which is equal to the square root of, in our conventions, x squared energy, it's 2n plus 1/2, we saw. So this gives x squared minus 2m over over pi. Okay? This is just using our convention that we are using so far. So this would be the discontinuity of this p, which is equal to the discontinuity of g, because the trivial factors that I said, these linear functions, don't have any discontinuities. So here is another claim. We claim that if we plot the density of roots, which of course when you have a discrete set of data would be a table where you make a table of xj and then 1 over xj plus 1 minus xj, and then you make a table of this and then you make a plot. See, when these distances are very small, means that the density is very large. They are very packed. This should match this square root of x squared minus 2m over pi. So I should get precisely the points, the discrete points falling on this curve. Okay? Let me derive this result for the discontinuity of G one more time. Okay, think about doubts. Let me think what I want to do next. Do I want to derive this or not? Okay. Let me derive the fact that G is also a square root. It's basically going backwards, but let me still do it because it might be still useful to do it once. Let's derive this discontinuity for G directly, instead of using what we know already from P. Let's suppose we didn't know about P. We started from the electrostatic problem. We derived first the Hermite polynomials, and now we want to derive the equation for G. So what we want is, we want the analog. Here someone should have complained. There was a zero miss, equal to zero. So let's call this equation, as usual, the same thing. We want the analog of this, but for g of x. Now, there is a trivial way of doing it. What is the relation between g of x and Q of X. We can say that Q of X is equal to E to the integral up to X of G of Y dy, because this is equal to the integral of sum of the integral up to X of 1 over Y minus XJ dy, and this is equal to integral of log of X minus XJ of sum, and this is equal to product over J of X minus XJ. Okay? Just some simple manipulations. So one thing we can do is plug in, and this I want to put here in the list of things to do. Can you still read if I write here? Or no? Yes? So the last, another thing I want to do, I want to plug Q equal to exponential of integral up to X G of Y dy in this equation here, and find the following equation for G, which is G square plus G prime is equal to 2XG plus 2M. Okay? Good. So this would be, so we plug in tau to get that second seemingly equivalent equation. Now that equation turns out to be much better to study the continuum limits. Let's understand why. So how do these roots scale? What is their typical size? What is the typical position of one of these roots? What's the typical position of an XJ? Of the position of an electrostatic charge in this potential? There are several ways of estimating it. One is by notice that the turning points, which are given by E minus V of X, are just N minus X squared, so X is of order square root of N. It lies between square root of N and square root of N. Right? Because the turning point is X squared equal to N. Right? So they lie between minus square root of n and square root of n, so they are of order square root of n. Another way is just to look at the equation. Let's put x from this equation, let's call what is this equation what? Some star. If we plug in star some n to the alpha dependence, you immediately see that you get if x would scale like n to the alpha, then star would tell you that n to the alpha is equal to, there are n terms from the sum, each of them 1 over n to the alpha, and so this implies that alpha is equal to 1 half. Okay, so x scales like square root of n. So this means that g scales like what? What is the order of g in terms of n? Order what? N to what power? Someone. It's simple. I just address these kind of things. So G was sum 1 over X minus XJ. So we have N terms. So G scales like n times 1 over n to the 1 half. So it scales like n to the 1 half. So g square scales like n. Okay? X times g scales like what? No? G scales like n to the 1 half. X scales like n to the 1 half. n again. Ah, here this m, of course there is no m in the problem. This is an n, of course. 2n, of course, is of order n. But let's look at g prime. G prime is of order what? G prime, I take derivative. So g prime is the sum of 1 over x minus xj square up to n. So there are n terms, but each of them goes like? It goes faster. So what g prime is of order what? 1. Good. So this is great news. It means that this equation here becomes algebraic. I can drop the derivative. It's not a differential equation. Instead, it is just g squared minus 2xg plus 2n equal to 0. This is just an algebraic equation. So I can solve it. It's just a quadratic equation, and there are two solutions. The two solutions are the two sheets of my Riemann surface, and the difference between the two solutions is the discontinuity. Right? So there are two solutions. The difference between the two is the discontinuity, which is equal to rho. So what are the two solutions? G plus minus are equal to x plus minus square root of 2m minus x square, and therefore rho is square root of x square minus 2m over pi. Okay. Sorry? M is N, always. You see, I always use M because in Mathematica I cannot use N. So N stands for numeric in Mathematica. So in Mathematica we will use M when we will go to Mathematica. But now we need this. Okay. So okay. There is a more powerful and more universal way of solving these equations by understanding how can I take the continuum limit of these equations. Sorry? This product of equations? This one?
Yeah.
It's a quadratic equation. There is g squared. Sorry? X squared minus 2m. Ah, okay. Okay. Okay, good. And here, I want there is an I factor, so I prefer to flip here and to put 2n minus x squared instead of having some I floating around.
We are hearing the very large n limit,
right? Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I think I wrote at some point, yeah. We were at some point moving to the continuum limit. So the advantage of G compared to Q is that Q is the right guy for a few excitations. It's the right variable. It's the Hermite polynomial. It's the right object. For many excitations, G is the right one. G is the one who you should consider. Now, there is a way of taking the continuum limit directly of this equation, forgetting about Q's or G's or whatever. We know how to take continuum limits of sums. Sums goes to integrals. Right? And then we can convert this into an integral equation directly for the density and try to solve this. So I will do this next, but I think it's a good time now to check all this stuff in Mathematica so that we really see by convincing ourselves that everything is working, I think that we will understand a bit better what's going on. But there is any question about the theory? So now the goal is let's first do all these checks in Mathematica. And then if we have time, probably we will not, we will solve again these equations in a more powerful and more universal way. But tell me, are there any questions? Is everything clear or everything obscure? Is it clear what we have been doing? Computing the discontinuities, going around, yeah? More or less? Okay. Hopefully it will become more clear now. Okay. Okay, so please think if you have some doubts. Let me just get some water. Okay, so okay, how to solve, how to check the first prediction? So we need to solve equations. We need to compute the zeros of what is there, which is, for example, x1, let's write just two variables first, minus 1 over x1 minus x2. Suppose this was, we want to find the roots of this, and the same thing where I replace 1 and 2. Okay, this would be a toy model. This would be a toy model for n equal to 2. I would have just two equations to solve. Okay, this is the equation with the star in the blackboard there. Okay, so this would be my equations. I will denote this by equations. Okay, now I want to find the roots of this equation. So what I say is find roots of the equations. What are the variables? X1 and X2. Now, this is not the correct syntax for find roots. The correct syntax is you should tell where should Mathematica start looking. Let's say start looking close to 1 for X1 and start looking close to minus 1 for X2. Okay? So Mathematica will try to solve the equations for variables X1 and X2, finding the roots, starting at 1 for x1 and starting at 2 for x2. And this would be the solution. 0.7 and minus 0.7. It looks like square root of 2, probably. Okay? Good. Now, what should I do if there are more variables? So, but first, let's make this a bit more clear. This would be the equations. The variables would be the second part. Let's not put it here. Let's put it here. And then I say, find roots. These are the equation, and these are the variables. Okay? Exactly the same, but just a bit cleaner. Okay. Did everyone get this? Is everything clear? Okay. Where is the pointer? These are the initial values where she will start looking. I just chose some positive number and some negative number. If you can give her good numbers to start, she will be faster, otherwise she will take a bit longer. Okay, so now what we want is something deep. We want many more equations. We want to solve 100 equations. So we will not write them all by hand, right? We will not write everything by hand. So let's make that the let's now consider 100 equations. So m is 100, the number of the equations. But let's for now put m equals 4 because we will learn to see, and then we'll just change m. We cannot use n. If you try n equals 4, she will complain. She will say that n is protected. Because n is used for numerics, right? N is what you do to make this. So you cannot define n. You need to use something else. So let's use m. M is equal to 4. And now, let's define the variables, for example. The variables would be a table where you tell Mathematica that you start with xj, and the position of xj can be, for example, j minus m over 2, just to have some variable centered around the origin. Okay? And this runs from j up to, from 1 up to m. Okay? And this would be x1 start at minus 1, x2 start at 0, x3 start at 1, x4 start at 2. It's not exactly centered around the origin, but who cares? It's just some starting points. We know that the distribution is centered around the origin. This is something more or less okay. Now, if you want, you can put a minus 1 half to make it really centered. Is it okay for everyone? This? Now, there is another way which I would like more to do, but it's really a question of taste. Ah, by the way, let me try something. If I put default, this might be better. Is it better? Because I think more information fits in the screen. If I put it this way for you, it might be better. Which one is it better? This one or the previous one?
The other one messes your boxes that show which input goes with.
Okay, so let me keep the other one. Okay, so this would be one way of doing it. Let's do it in a fancy way. Just it's not that it becomes particularly easier to read. But we can say the following. We can first notice that range of m is a nice function. It gives an, a list. 1, 2, 3, 4. And now we can say that what we want is the following. And now let me introduce you, let me show you another very useful notation, which is when you want to apply something, some function, for example, sine, and you want to apply to each element of m, from each element of this range of m. You want to compute sine 1, sine of 2, sine of 3, and sine of 4. Okay, so you want to pick sine and act on each of the elements. So how would you do? You can make a table, there are many ways, but there is a very useful way, which is you just write sine, and then you make slash add, which is apply to range of m. And this will give sine of 1, sine of 2, sine of 3. Okay, this is apply to some list. Apply to the elements of some. Okay? So another example, if I have sine at a comma b, this is what it would give. Okay? So a fancy way of doing what we did above, it would be the following. We will define variables to be the function x, and then it's just useful to practice a bit. Of course, in this case, it might be a bit complicated. This would be a way of defining our variables. Okay? So what have we done here? We define, we will apply whatever function it is here, we will apply it to 1, 2, 3, 4. And what is this function? Here is the function which just gets x of the argument and gets argument minus m over 2. And therefore, you get precisely this. I don't remember how big the other one was. I don't know if this one is more economical or no. Let me see. Sorry. So these two are exactly equivalent. So I don't know which one you prefer. The first one might be maybe a bit simpler. This one, oh, I like this one best, but whatever. It's just good to know. What about the equations? Let's make also a table of equations. A table of equations there. So am I going too fast? No? Did everyone manage to have some list of variables like this? Okay. So the equations would now be a table. Let me do it first the usual way. Xj minus a sum. Okay, let me write first sum like this. of 1 over xj minus xk. Now, we only want to sum if k is not equal to j. So we can put here, if k is equal to j, give 0, otherwise give this. And this sum runs from k equal 1 up to m. Okay? And we want to make a table when j runs from 1 up to m. Okay? So you see, here is one. This is just the equation. And here is one of the equations. X1 interacting with X2, X3, and X4. X2 interacting with X1, X3, and X4. And there will be two equations below. Okay, let me also enter while you write this. Let me also enter. By the way, is this zoom enough? Yes? So let me also enter the way I would prefer to do it. And you have two alternative ways. This is maybe more straightforward. There is no subtlety. I like this one best. And again, I use the same kind of notation. I apply x, j will be 1 up to m. So what I will do, whatever I will create here, I will apply to range of m. And then I have x of j minus sum from k equal 1 up to m if this would be the way I would prefer to do it. Okay? By the way, here it's a bit unfair because in one case I use this ugly notation for sum and in the other case I use the nice notation. So of course my choice looks much better. So again, you can either use shortcuts or you can do as I'm doing now. Did everyone enter the first option? You can select, like I did, all this stuff, sum, and go to cell, convert to, and then you click standard form. It's already in standard form, but you click again. And it converts to this nice notation. Okay? So you select either the full cell or just what you want to convert. You go to cell, convert to, and then you click traditional standard form, which is already the one which is there before. Okay. So again, these are two absolutely equivalent ways of defining it. The reason why I always prefer this kind of ways is that there are much less brackets and it's easier, in my opinion, to debug and to see what is going wrong and where am I missing brackets. So here, for each variable, I apply this stuff. Ah, by the way, but here it's wrong. Here it's okay.
What does the slash do?
This slash here? So as I told you, so all this part defines some function here. Right? Once I have a function, this slash does threads the function over some list. Okay? So here range of m is 1, 2, 3, 4. And then it applies this when this is replaced by 1, this is replaced by 2, by 3, and by 4. And these are the four equations that you want. Okay? So this is... Okay, yeah. Sorry? If you don't have slash, then it means G applied to this. So it means this. Right? It's G applied to what comes next. So it's important to notice the difference. Okay? It's applied to each thing. It's really what's called thread. It's really you pick and you distribute it.
I don't get the sum to work.
The sum to look nice? You can select.
I think I put brackets in the wrong place,
maybe. Yeah, you forgot the bracket. Yeah, we have a bracket here in the wrong place. Here you should have a bracket. And then at the end, no bracket. And comma should be here. Yeah, you see, so you make a table of this stuff here. You want to sum, right? You want to make a table, you see? You want to make a table of these objects here. And then you make a table which is for equation 1, equation 2, equation 3. So let me show the full thing that we have now. So we have, let me put this and this in this way. And the equations here are two absolutely the same. So this is our code so far. Let me erase this, 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 this. Okay? These are just two equivalent. I defined each variable in two equivalent ways. You can use whichever you prefer. Okay. Now let's try to see if it works. Let's ask, find roots, these equations with those variables. Okay, here is the solution. It's a semi-symmetric solution with four solutions here. And again, find roots yields a set of replacement rules. The outcome is a set of replacement rules. It tells x1 is replaced by this, x2 is replaced by this, etc. Right? So, for example, if I want to check if the equations are satisfied, I can just ask, take the equations and replace the solution. Right? And when I do it, I get 10 to the minus 16, which is 0, 0, 0, and 0. Okay? So find root gives a set of replacements, and then I can replace it and check that it is indeed zero. If I would like, I could increase the precision. I could put here as an option of find root, working precision, go to 20, which means 20 digits. And now, when I will ask her to solve, okay, 20 digits, the precision doesn't increase much. Okay. It's because I don't want precision. I want to increase accuracy. These are all things that you can look up in help. You just go to find root and see what kind of options there are and just play with them. Why can't I improve this? Accuracy goal, there are precision goal. Oh, because I'm doing this find root, but then I'm using always the stupid find root instead of the good one. Right, I was defining here just for fun. Okay, so this find root, let's call it FR, a find root. And now you can base here FR. And now each of them is 10 to the minus 19. It's better. Okay. Before it was 0 because it was slower than the precision. If I put here 100, this is the only thing I need. Then I get 10 to the minus 100. Okay. Now, there is a useful function, which is the function chop. Chop is if a number is very small, just put it to 0. Okay? So chop killed this 10 to the minus 100, which is of course a 0. Okay? So typically chop chops up to 10 to the minus 16, I think. Okay? So, yes?
So our equations aren't actually equations, like they're just linear combinations of the...
Yeah, you will use find roots.
So find root finds when that thing goes to 0.
Yeah, exactly. Find root finds when there is a root of that thing. We could also use equations, and then instead of find root, we would use solve. Another way of solving equations. Find root is faster. Okay, good. So let's remove this working precision. This is overkilling. 20 digits is more than enough. And here the equations are indeed satisfied. So does everyone have an FR, which is a replacement rule? Please define an FR such that when you run FR, you get a replacement rule. And now let's try to put 100 roots instead of 4. And indeed, we get a bunch of zeros. The equations are very well satisfied. Okay? And here is the replacement rule. It is a replacement rule for all these 100 roots. Okay. Did the code work for everyone with 100 roots? Let's replace m by 100 and check whether it works. Of course, because the potential is even, and you are putting charges in an even potential. So of course, you will always have the solutions will be symmetrically distributed. The problem is symmetric around the origin. Okay, good. So now let's plot the density of these particles. So let's make a table of the position xj. And the density, which is 1 over xj plus 1 minus xj. Okay, let's make a table of such elements. Let's maybe put the average, xj plus 1 plus xj over 2. Just not to privilege xj over xj plus 1. To treat both in the same footing. And j runs from 1 to m minus 1, because the last point we cannot use. We are using xj plus 1. Okay? Is this okay? This would be a list. Now, we can replace fr, and we can apply list plots. This is the density of particles. Okay? More? Let me erase this. This is, who cares? And again, a better notation. Let's define list plot to be equal to. We can again use this notation. We define a function. We apply this function to 1 up to m minus 1. Then we replace. I finished the definition of the function. Then we replace, and then we list plots. Okay. So again, two absolutely equivalent definitions. One using this notation, you define some function and apply it then to all these values, and this makes a table like the other one. Okay? Sorry, 1 second. And let's put semicolon at the end. We already saw the plot. We don't need to see it all the time. So again, two absolutely equivalent ways of doing it. Okay? Is everyone happy? Here. Now let's plot our prediction for the density. This is point 3 there. Let's plot our prediction. So we make plot square root of x squared minus 2m over pi from x minus square root of 2m, right? The zeros of the square root up to square root of 2m. And let's plot it in red. Plot style going to red. Let's call this plot. Okay? Did everyone plot this? So here is, no? Ah, by the way. Sorry. 2m minus x squared. You remember? column fixed the sign inside the square root, but I didn't fix it here. So here it is not. The signs here are wrong. It's minus x squared plus 2m. M is equal to n. Of course. And I'll try to make show, plot, and list plot at the same time. Did someone do it?
By the way, it isn't much very right, but that is a...
You can put the plot range, you can fix the plot range to... you see, the axes don't start at zero. Okay? And now we can show, and as you might have noticed, the fit, unless I did some mistake, the fit should be quite nice. Let's see. Let's show plot and list plot, and here they are, the points exactly on top of our prediction. Right? So this is like being experimentalists, right? You have some data, and your red prediction, and the prediction fits the data spectacularly. Sure. More?
Yeah.
More? Let me just go down a slight bit. Can I decrease the zoom still a bit? Can you still see if I put this?
Yeah.
Okay. Ah, sorry.
Uh-huh.
You cannot get this list plot to work?
Yeah.
Neither of them?